In the 1980s, the concrete wall that divided the German city of Berlin still stood. On the east side, the German Democratic Republic carried forth the Soviet Union's agenda until it was toppled in 1990 as the Cold War came to a close. In his new book, Burning Down the House, Punk Rock Revolution and the Fall of the Berlin Wall, music journalist Tim Moore uncovers the little-known story of a group of punk rockers in East Berlin whose teenage rebellion became the spark that proved the power of the resistance. I spoke with Moore and Moore about this, and he told me at the time in East Germany there was an officially sanctioned music scene that was mostly dominated by bands that tried to sound like Deep Purple. But his story begins with a small group of teenagers there who heard the Sex Pistols on Western radio.
That flipped the switch for them. It was as if they felt the Pistols were saying things and articulating in ways that they'd always wanted to but hadn't thought to yet. And that was the spark for most of these kids to get into punk.
So you were in Berlin not long after all of this happened. In 1992, you said you got there. Tell us about how you found out about this group of teens and how you uncovered this story.
I was pretty clueless. I was kind of a typical American in that I thought Germany and Oktoberfest were basically the same thing. And I expected to get out of the plane in Berlin and see everybody in lederhosen swinging those giant 1 liter beers around. And instead, I landed in a high rise complex out in the far east part of the city. It was a big gray building surrounded by a bunch of other big gray buildings. And it was near the East Berlin Zoo, so you'd hear the howling animals at night. So it was very different from Oktoberfest, obviously, and I was kind of disappointed at first. But then I discovered this whole scene that was happening over there. If you went into the central parts of East Berlin in the old, basically empty, dilapidated buildings, there were a lot of squats and a lot of interesting bars and clubs and galleries going in. So behind these great facades, you had just an unbelievably colorful scene taking off, and I ended up DJing in that scene for most of the 90s. And by coincidence then, meeting people who'd been part of the East German punk resistance. So I landed amongst them, coincidentally. And then eventually, once I become friends with some of these people, I was shown things that they'd kept hidden during the course of the dictatorship. There was one guy in particular who had a false bottom drawer during the dictatorship, and he'd been the guitarist in one of the early East Berlin bands. And he showed me eventually a few lyric sheets and photos of his friends. And I realized that this was something special and something basically invisible. It was a scene that no one had learned about. I guess primarily because it wasn't covered in the Eastern media, because the Eastern media didn't acknowledge oppositional type voices. And for ideological reasons, the punks had never sought attention in the Western media the way a lot of other opposition groups did.
Tell us more about this particular group and how dangerous this was for them at the time, right? Like, how dangerous was it to be in the punk scene at all or to be rebellious in that way?
The first punk in East Berlin was a 15-year-old girl, and she went by the name Major. And it didn't take long for the Stasi to consider it a threat. One of the surprises for me in the research process was seeing the level of paranoia of the secret police towards this movement really quickly. And, of course, I realized as I got deeper into it that they were correct, basically. So eventually the Stasi, which is the name of the secret police, put in a major crackdown. And the punks ended up in jail, subject to daily detainment and arrest and beatings. What happened was the punks, they kept fighting. They basically, a lot of them would go to jail, come back out, put the leather jacket on and keep going. And that changed the game because other opposition-minded people could see that it was possible to resist and survive. That was a game-changing realization for the whole opposition scene. So yeah. I think that leads to then, in the second half of the 80s, people taking the protests out into the streets and into the public eye, and that's how it's able to then snowball into the mass demonstrations that we know from 1989.
So this sort of small group of what started as just, you know, teenage rebels really, you think, sparked something that really ended up being incredibly historically influential?
Yeah, they lost their fear of the police and of the secret police, and they steeled the resolve of a lot of the other opposition-minded people. All of these groups ended up interacting under the umbrella of the church. The church was a safe space. They had a special status that didn't allow uniformed security forces to come into the churches. So all the punk concerts took place in churches. And that's also, since they were harboring peace activists and human rights activists, how these groups ended up finding common purpose. And also the other groups saw the extreme treatment that the punks were subject to and the fact that they were still surviving and continuing to fight. And that was the key, I think.
Let's talk a little bit about the music in this, right? This is also about music. Are there some songs or some bands that are really emblematic of this?
Not really. They were all barred from the state media system. So they couldn't record. They couldn't distribute anything. They couldn't get on the radio. And it was dangerous to even have your music heard in a lot of cases. I mean, as a musical phenomenon, it pretty much disappeared. On November 9th, 1989, the night that the wall fell, one of these bands was playing a show. And towards the end of their set, the crowd started to go crazy. And the band couldn't understand what's going on. They didn't know whether they were playing particularly well that night or whatever. And they come down off the stage and they're told the wall's fallen. And they broke the band up that night. Basically, they knew that the goal had been achieved, and that in the future, the message and the music itself was going to have to change to fit new political realities.
Yeah. So it sounds like it started maybe about music, but it was about much more than that, clearly. Do you think that there's still a little bit of that true spirit in punk rock today, or do you think that this has been lost? I mean, I guess since this was not like a widely known story, and you're sort of uncovering it, I wonder if you listen to punk rock music today and feel like it's a shell.
I think there was something magical about the way they couched their message in this really aggressive, energetic music. I think it's not coincidental. And sometimes after shows, people would literally run out of the churches and start spraying oppositional graffiti on walls. So there was definitely a magic to that mix. I think they basically came up with a sort of a handbook for resisting authoritarianism that would have to be created in other ways for other settings, including, you know, I see one of the interesting things about working on the book for so long, it took me about 10 years to do the research and find all the people I needed to talk to.
Yeah.
And over that time, it went from what was basically to me a fascinating story to something that was almost frighteningly relevant, because during that time, you had the Snowden revelations of our own mass surveillance, and you saw the militarization of our police and the drastic reaction to protesters here in the States from Black Lives Matter and the pipeline activists. And so I don't think there's a direct analog. It's not like we need to give a bunch of kids guitars and see what happens.
Right.
But I do think the idea of youth activism, of grassroots movements making a concrete change in society that this is a historical example of, I think that's an important thing to have out there in the world at the moment.
All right. Tim Moore is a music journalist and the author of Burning Down the House, Punk Rock Revolution and the Fall of the Berlin Wall. Tim, thanks so much for coming on the show to talk about this.
Thanks a lot, Lauren.